GoDaddy. This podcast is brought to you by Podshow and GoDaddy. Want killer content with a badass domain name? This show will give you a special code to get great discounts at GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy.
Indie Film Nation, episode number 50 for the 29th of June, 2006. Welcome again to another edition of Indie Film Nation. I'm your host, Mike Smith, and as you know, this is a show that unites independent filmmakers and fans of indie film from around the world. On today's show, we chat to Ken Schaefer, the product developer for Frameforge. On the In Focus segment of the program, we introduce the first Indie Film Nation correspondent, Bruce Himmelblau, and on the MySpace Filmmaker of the Week, we speak to Russ Emanuel from Los Angeles with his very happening-looking, snappy film called Girl with Gun. And plus, all the latest independent film festival news, film festival wrap-up, and some great music straight off the Podsafe Music Network. And as always, the music in the background is A Pocketbook by Derek K. Miller from his Pen Machine Sessions. GoDaddy hosting plans are now more powerful than ever. Best of all, plans start at just $3.95 a month. No matter what plan you choose, your site receives 24/7 protection in the GoDaddy.com world-class data center. Plus, as an Indie Film Nation listener, enter the code INDIE3 when you check out and you'll get the .com domain name for just $6.95 a year. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Well, there you go. It's time for another edition of Indie Film Nation. And this, obviously, is, as I mentioned on last week's show, the first anniversary of this program in its many forms, but it is Indie Film Nation or In The Queue or iFilmcast. It was there for a short time, but it is the 50th show, and I thought it would be appropriate to name the best film, the best Indie Film Nation film in the true spirit of independent filmmaking, and we have a tie. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are two films that we featured on this program. It's Gamers by Chris Foligno and the second film, Under the City by Dean Rebayoff and Adam McGollum. So to both those filmmakers out there, both those films have currently not got distribution yet and are both fantastic films. I urge you all to check out their websites, which are linked in the show notes, and get out there and support these two films because you will not be disappointed. But for you people in Melbourne, Australia, you get a chance to see Gamers with its world premiere at the Melbourne Underground Film Festival on the 16th of July. So don't forget that, and go out and support probably one of the best comedies of 2005-2006. And it's fantastic to pump up the tires of a couple of great films there. But now it's time for the independent film news. Let's not dilly-dally and let's get into it. And one of the more unusual articles I come across on the wires was Sheffield Goes Bollywood. It's reported that the English city of Sheffield is about to, has won the right to host the 2007 International Indian Film Academy Awards. And it's a bit of a coup, they're saying there, for the Yorkshire city, and they're going to be going Bollywood, which sounds unusual, Bollywood award ceremony in England. Anyway, poor old Jar Jar Binks cannot take a win from the all the Star Wars films. It has once again picked up an award at the lovefilm.com website, where it was once again picked up the award for the most annoying character in a film. This was voted on. The second most annoying character or person in the film was Andy McDowell from Four Weddings and a Funeral. And number three went to Rowan Atkins for his Mr. Bean character. So that's an award that you don't want to pick up, the most annoying award. And on the there's an interesting little debate happening there in Europe that they're actually currently debating the word independent, actually today, and to establish what the word independent means for the European Union's media programs, which apparently has just a lazy 85 million euros to throw around next year for the exhibitors, distributors and exporters of European films. So they're just trying to clarify the field of what is an independent film, and it'd be interesting, and it might help assist actually define what is an independent film with this panel of experts sitting down to work out what is independent. Maybe we'll be able to, clarify for us what is an independent film or studio. And also, look, this is a bit of an announcement. Being part of the Pod Show delivery network, Pod Show has finally announced that they're very, very soon to announce their rollout of their beta of their website, Pod Show Plus and the Pod Show PDN. And you can now register at www.podshow.com to be a listener and get your account. And I have checked out this service and it is fantastic, and it will definitely enhance all of your experience with listening with podcasts, for it being the one-stop shop to register your podcasts that you listen to, both on the PDN and throughout the network. It was certainly going to provide a new listener experience. So if you've got the time, get out there and check out the Pod Show website and register to become a Pod Show listener. And also, part of Pod Show, they have the campaign running, Make Advertising Better with Earthlink, with the Ad Challenge. And that's a chance for you to win a big money and also prestige to create a new form of advertising. And check out adchallenge.podshow.com for all the details. And it's certainly a fantastic program. So Pod Show, things are happening. Get on and drop into the Pod Show website at podshow.com, and also that wonderful competition to find out more information. Well, there you go. That was the news, and now it's time for the Film Festival wrap-up, and we'll first take a look at Silver Docs, which is probably the world's leading sort of guide for best documentary films, or the films that will feature heavily later on in the year, and will probably feature in next year's Academy Awards list. And the top award went to Jesus Camp. A special jury mention went to A Chairman George and Seeds, as well as an honourable mention went to McLaren's Negatives and also the Aluminium Foil. So keep an eye out for those films. They've supposedly got some early dibs on the going for this year's documentary category. And also to wrap up, the other day was the Sydney International Film Festival, and there were some no real surprises that Little Miss Sunshine, one of the Sundance hits, took the best feature for the world cinema, and the best documentary went to An Inconvenient Truth, as well as the best feature in the sidebar program went to Fearless, a wonderful Hong Kong action film there. So check out those films as they, as they collect their awards. It was not really much of a surprise. Also wrapping was the Shanghai International Film Festival and the German film 4 Minutes, directed by Chris Klaus, took home the bigger prize of the night, and was somewhat of a bit of a shock because young Chris got up and in his speech, he for once genuinely sounded like he was surprised to pick up that award. So good on you, Chris, one from out of the blue, but certainly it sounds like it's a fantastic film from all reports. Well, now it's time to look forward to some film festivals coming up, and let's head over to our cousins just across the way from us down here in Australia, and it's the Auckland International Film Festival, which kicks off on the 7th of July through to the 23rd down in, obviously, Auckland, New Zealand, and they've got a fantastic program, some excellent international guests coming out, so check it out on the link in the show notes, and there'll be a few of the guests that are heading out for Auckland slipping over to the Melbourne International Film Festival as well. The MAME International Film Festival in Waterville, MAME in the US kicks off on the 14th of July to the 23rd of July. And it looks like a fantastic 10 days of cinema, and is certainly one to head up to if you're in that part of the world. As well as I've got a couple of announcements. The Omaha Film Festival is currently looking for films this year. It's in its second year, and check out www.omahafilmfestival.org, and there's a link in the show notes as always to enter your films in, and they've got there's been a call for entries, as well as the second annual Hayden Films Online Film Festival is on, and this is a great opportunity to win some money here. They've got some prizes, $250 viewer appreciation award even for viewers, so check out www.haydenfilms.com for more details, and the deadline is the 15th of July, so get your entries in right now, because it sounds like it's a great little film fest. And now it's time for the inside tip, and this time, or this week, it's Frameforge 3D. It's a wonderful piece of storyboarding software. And I got in contact with the company and spoke to one of the head programmers, Ken Schaefer, of this wonderful bit of software.
Hello, Ken. It's Michael Smith from Indie Film Nation. How are you? You are one of the developers involved in a product, Frameforge 3D. Can you just briefly tell us about the product?
Basically, in short, it's a virtual film studio. It allows you to set up a location, be it an interior or an exterior, in a very easy-to-use 3D world, and place cameras and move actors around and allow you to play as if you were basically on your set or location prior to actually going there.
And with the product, you've recently released the version number 2. How does that differ from version number 1? Because that had been around for a little while, hadn't it?
Yeah, how much time do you have?
No. Tell us. Yeah, we've got plenty of time.
Basically, the fundamental paradigm is the same. What we really wanted to do is, this originally was sort of conceived as a storyboarding program, and then grew way beyond that. So basically, what our motto originally was don't draw your storyboards, direct them. And what we really wanted to do was allow the user to not just sort of convey what they had in their head, but really explore and experiment and actually strengthen their images through things which they normally would only discover once they're actually on a set, you know, the sort of magic that happens on a set. A lot of that can happen in the computer now, because you can really play with angles, you can, because you're using multiple cameras, you can really see things which you maybe had not thought of prior to actually setting up a shot, something that never really happened with basic storyboarding. The other thing, of course, is everything you set up in the program is actually sort of guaranteed to be shootable. One of the big problems with traditional storyboarding is you may end up with a sequence that looks fantastic on paper, and you get on the set and discover that the forced perspective is wrong, or to get the shot you want, you have to put a camera through a wall, or you'd need to use, you know, such a wide-angle lens to get the perspective that you wanted that it would unacceptable or unacceptable distortion, or any of a number of variety of technical problems with actually shooting it. With Frameforge, what we do is we actually allow you to specify the camera equipment that you have, what lenses you have available, what film size you're using, aspect ratios, that kind of thing. And it then limits you to the parameters you've specified. In addition, you can specify that you have like a real working ceiling that you need to deal with, so it won't let you put the camera through the ceiling and that kind of thing. So it becomes a much more integral and useful part of the production process, because everything you set up is actually sort of guaranteed to work. You aren't going to get on the set and find that, as I said, you know, the forced perspective is wrong because it's all based on the physics of optics. And so starting from that position, we basically, which pretty much version 1 all dealt with, we made a number of major ease of use improvements in version 2. We made a number of visual improvements in version 2. We went from a hinged actor style, which meant that each part of the body was actually like a separate little piece, and it was hinged like a those dolls that those wooden dolls that artists used to draw.
Yep.
Where each piece is So we went from that style to what's called single mesh deformation, which means that or skeletal mesh deformation, which means that there's an internal skeleton and the skin is one sort of smooth surface, and then that bends, and that gives a much cleaner, more photorealistic look to the actors. In addition, one of the big things we did was we added facial expressions so that you could really convey much more what the emotion of the scene is through the faces of the actors. We also tried to increase the, as I said, the focus on don't draw them, direct them, with functions like look at and reach for, so that you can just click on an actor and say look at and click on a point and their head turns to look at whatever that is, which means, you know, you're setting up the scene that much faster. We also have a number of new rendering styles. Some people like the look of a cartoon or a sketch drawing versus the more photorealistic look of FrameForge. So we now have several new rendering options. We have a whole bunch of new objects. We more than doubled our object library, which gives obviously people more objects to work with. We added the ability to age the actors so that you can again come, you know, approximate the look much more. Lots of, you know, very subtle new features that allow you to do complicated camera moves very easily, such that one, for example, you can lock the camera to pointing at an object, and then if you dolly around, the camera remains pointing at the object, which makes doing something like a steady cam shot very easy because you aren't concerned about continually, you know, reorienting the camera. Lots of things like that.
And how long did this update take to develop? How long have you been working on it?
Probably roughly about 2 years. And the other answer to that question is longer than we expected.
Yes.
But, you know, we kept on sort of coming up with new ideas and really sort of value-added stuff. I mean, we also worked a lot on, we added hardware acceleration to the program, which means that it runs faster, and we added a lot more actors so that there's more variety in their look. We added a new ethnicity. We had originally, in version 1, we had Caucasian, Asian, and Black, and we've added a Middle Eastern / Indian ethnicity. And whereas in the past we had one or two faces per actor, now we have four different faces per ethnicity. Plus, you can change things like you can change, you know, how sharp their chin is, how big their nose is, that kind of thing. So there's a lot more customization there. We've added a lot. One of the really big cool things that we've added is gamepad control. And we actually have our own branded control pad, we call it, called the Director's Pad. It basically is a standard USB gamepad with an Xbox configuration, but it's silkscreened with, you know, what the controls do for FrameForge. And what it allows you to do is basically control virtually the entire program using the control pad's joysticks, which is really great as a director, because you can really sit back with this basically remote control camera Mm-hmm. And people have really said that it even more helps you focus not so much on using the program, but on, you know, thinking like a director or cinematographer or whoever's working with it, and really focus on the product, not the process.
And with yourself, are you a filmmaker, or how did you end up becoming involved in this particular project?
Yes, well, way back when. I have a degree in film production from NYU.
Yep.
Just one of the premier film schools in the U.S. And I moved out to Hollywood, Los Angeles, after I graduated, and worked for several years in production as a script coordinator on a number of TV shows. I'm also a writer myself. I wrote a Star Trek The Next Generation episode that got produced. I wrote ABC Movie of the Week that didn't get produced, but which I got paid for, which is half the battle.
Yes.
And so on and so forth. I am in the midst of hopefully producing one of my own projects. And in the process of sort of way back when working with the productions and seeing, you know, what they were struggling with the then current 2D clip art storyboarding programs, and seeing how everything was an exercise in compromise and frustration, and it was really trying to substitute for a storyboard artist, that basically somebody who couldn't draw would buy one of these storyboard programs, and mm-hmm. it would produce clip art, but there really wasn't any improvement in the output. It was just another way of getting forced perspective and so on, and I just thought that that was the wrong way to go about it. And way back when, computers weren't really powerful enough to do the 3D stuff, but when we sort of reached the point a couple of years ago when you know, the average computer really could handle it, then I decided that I really wanted to do this program and do it in a way that really made a lot of it sense to me as a director. And I did, as my senior thesis film at NYU, I directed a 30-minute film.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had the background to know what I wanted, and we worked with a lot of directors and cinematographers, and we've gotten a really great response, particularly from members of the ASC, which I don't know if your listeners know.
Yep,
is an honor society. They know that it's an honor society, not a guild?
Yep.
Okay. Quite a number of members on that had been incredibly enthusiastic when we first showed the program. And what was so interesting was when we walked in to demo it, they basically said, "We all hate storyboards." And what was interesting was, as cinematographers, whenever I sort of, you know, talk to people and say, "Well, you know, the cinematographers hate storyboards," everybody says, "Oh, well, that's because they don't want to be told what to shoot. They want to be creative," and so on. And in fact, that wasn't the reason. The what they said, they hate storyboards, is sort of precisely what I was talking about in the beginning, that they hate being in a position where they walk on a set and the director has, you know, the scene beautifully sequenced and knows exactly what they want, and it's simply not shootable. So they're in the position of telling the director, "You can't get what you want," and which the director doesn't want to hear. And they end up spending a huge amount of time basically showing the director that if they try and get what they want, this is what they'll have, and it'll look terrible, and redoing it. And so the ASC people have been really excited about it because it gets rid of that problem, and it, in fact, allows them to experiment and explore, particularly on stuff where there's you know, some effects and whatnot. It's really incredibly useful. It was used on Herbie Fully Loaded by actually two different departments within the production, not knowing that each other one was using it. The director of effects photography found it incredibly useful. I've lost my train of thought.
Yes,
but there you go.
No, but look, and the Frameforge Studio 2, how much is it?
It lists for $399 US.
Yep, and you've got an upgrade price, have you, for previous owners?
Yes, we do. It right now bumps up to $199, so they should move.
Yes, but look, Ken, it's a fantastic program. I've used the version 1, and I look forward to getting my hands on version 2 because it's helped me on a number of productions. And for someone who's an absolute not a very good drawer, it's a great program, and you should be commended on it. And it sounds like with all the additional features, it sounds terrific. And thank you very much for your time, getting you to explain a little bit about the product.
No problem. Thank you.
Endorse those sentiments more strongly, how a wonderful piece of software FrameForge 3D is. And as part of that interview, I have secured a copy of FrameForge to give away to one lucky listener. Now, the easiest way I thought of doing this was all you simply need to do is drop me an email. That's it, with your name, your contact details. And what I will do is I will put your name and details into the barrel, or whatever way I can select one lucky entrant. And there will be no correspondence entered into this. It will be open for 2 weeks. So on the 15th of July, I will cut it off. So you've got 2 weeks to send me an email. That's it, and I will select one winner, and it is the cheapest way you'll ever get a copy of FrameForge, which is value retail at $399 US, and it is certainly exciting to be given giving an opportunity to give away that program. And now it's time for some PodSafe music, straight off the PodSafe Music Network. This is Beth Thornley, one of my favourite artists, and her title track off her title debut album, My Glass Eye.
I bend my words around quarters, hoping that it might improve their worth. My little plan, it hasn't worked yet. They just keep falling right on through your hands. And in return, so I've been flying high.
introducing a new addition to the Indie Film Nation team. It's Bruce Himmelblau from Chicago. How are you today, Bruce?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, Bruce, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've signed on board. You've kindly taken up that kind offer to become a correspondent for us here at Indie Film Nation. And could you just tell us whereabouts exactly you are based in the United States, and tell us a little bit about your filmmaking background?
Well, actually in a suburb just north of Chicago, or about 30 miles north, the hometown of the Bears, where they practice, is called Lake Forest. And it's also the hometown of Vince Vaughn. So I've kind of been sandwiched here between L.A. and New York, and trying to scope out the independent film market here in Chicago.
Okay, and just tell us about your what's your filmmaking background and the type of things that you've done in the past.
Well, I got the film bug working on the 48-hour film project last year here in Chicago, which is a competition between independent filmmakers, where they have to get a subject, write the film, edit the film, and actually write it, shoot it, and edit it, all within 48 hours, and have to deliver it, and then it's shown a couple of days later, and it's judged locally, and then compared against other 48-hour film projects nationally, and actually I think internationally as well. And so that's where I got the film bug, working on that. We worked on the editor, as an editor on that, so we actually got a little bit of sleep because we came in at the tail end.
Okay, and with your, what are you in the sense of when you're doing your film work? Are you an editor or a cinematographer or a producer?
Well, I got my start being a producer, and actually I'm more of what they call a hands-on producer, which pretty much means in some cases I'm doing it all. I'm shooting it, I'm editing it, I'm organizing the crew for it, and in some rare cases I'm actually doing the writing of it.
And with the type of work, what type of work have you actually done in the past? Has it been, do you come from a corporate background, or do you... have you just been, as you said, you've been bitten by the film bug, but what brought you to get involved in the crazy world of film?
Well, I guess it started back in high school, really. I was on the radio station there, being a DJ, playing music, as well as working on the news crew there. And then from there went to college, majored in radio and television and communications. Got out of college and worked in advertising for a couple of years. And a couple of years after that, got married to another producer and editor. And we started a business called Blue Sky Video Productions. And that was about 20 years ago. And we started off shooting your typical weddings to pay some of the bills, although we've gradually moved more towards corporate work, shooting commercials locally and corporate training videos, orientations, the like of that. And then from there, my wife started getting more and more involved with the film industry. She's actually working on her third feature as an editor. And I'm sometimes assisting her depending on the crew assignments. And we kind of trade off. When I need help, she helps me out. When she needs help, I help her out, which is perfect because we're married. And that's kind of what the marriage has been based on. For a lot of people think that if you work together every day, you can't be married. But we've made a success of it, being married for 20 years and working together for 20 years.
That's fantastic, Bruce. And with your current, do you you involved in any other organisations? And I believe you may even do a podcast yourself.
Actually, I do. It is called the Weaver News Minute. which is we're being hosted by Libsyn, and so they can find us through iTunes. All you need to do is type in the word Weva, W-E-V-A, and what that is, it's a technology-based news segment designed for the independent videographer, as well as the independent filmmaker, that we can show you the new tips and tricks and new technology that's available in the market, new cameras, we look at new printers, we look at DVD authoring software, we look at the whole range of whatever it takes to produce video these days.
And with your and how often do you do that podcast, and is it geared towards the videographer, is it?
Yes, it's kind of a weekly podcast, although what we post on iTunes is not everything I shoot, because there's a lot of content that we shoot that we make only available to Weva members, so that in order to see some of the background stuff, some of the really deep tutorials, they would actually need to become a Weva member and sign into that that organization. But what we do make available to the public are new equipment. We've just recently looked at the new Panasonic camera, the HD camera from Panasonic. We've looked at the Sony camera. We've looked at a number of other products that came out of NAB. We just got back from NAB with over 50 interviews, and those are slowly going up.
And with you attending NAB, you got to ask a question at one of the feature panels to a very interesting person by the name of Hughes Winburn. Is that correct?
Yes, we did. And Hughes, go ahead.
No, you go. You're great.
Basically, a background on Hughes Winburn. Hughes is the editor on Crash. He won the Academy Award for that, and they offered a panel, actually not really a panel, but more of a featured event where he spoke about what it took to cut the movie and what his background was. And so I actually got a chance to ask him a couple questions.
And which we'll, at the end of this introduction, we'll play that on the show so people can hear the question you asked. And that's exactly what being a correspondent on Indie Film Nation here is about. And Bruce, we look forward to having you join us on the program from time to time and giving us some content and telling us what's happening in your part of the world. And it's a pleasure to have you on board, and I'd like to welcome you to the team. And where can people find out your website? Where can people find out more about yourself and the type of projects you're involved in at the moment?
Well, I've got a couple websites. The main website that you can find my work on is ChicagoEditor.com, which is my freelance editing site. I've got a couple trailers that I've cut together there. One trailer for fun was this new Superman movie coming out. I guess it was shot down in your neck of the woods.
Yes.
And we cut together an interesting trailer that cuts between the Superman Returns trailer and the movie The Passion. And so that was one of those remixes. If you've heard of the Shining remix, this is kind of something like that. But the website is ChicagoEditor.com, and all the contact information for there is on the site.
Well, fantastic, Bruce, and I hope people check out your site and look forward to having you here on the program from time to time with interviews and chat some more about what's happening in independent world in Chicago. Thanks for joining us here.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Bruce Himmelblau. What did you learn working on Crash, either professionally or personally?
The greatest lesson I've learned professionally and personally on Crash is that it was never good enough. You know, it's like It's, you know, I compare editing to running a marathon and production to sprinting. And you hit a wall in post-production and editing at about mile 19. And you really need somebody like the director to keep things driving. So I guess what I learned from him is that I had to learn how to pace myself a little bit. And that there always was something else that could be done. And there always is another idea. And, you know, the other thing, not just on Crash that I've learned, is there are no bad ideas. You know, you hear, I like the ideas to be able to flow in the editing room. And so something that may seem like a bad idea often turns out to be the idea that saves a certain scene.
We're speaking to this week's MySpace Filmmaker of the Week, Manuel. Sorry, there, Russ. How are you today?
I'm good.
Great.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. And your film I saw on the come across on MySpace, Girl with a Gun. Tell us about this project. An interesting title, and it's a short film. Tell us firstly, you know, what is Girl with a Gun, and what sort of project is it?
Well, Girl with Gun, as you mentioned, it's a short film. It's 14 minutes, 53 seconds long. It's basically, as the title suggests, about a girl with gun. It's about a female superhero assassin. And it's about her conflict with herself. Kind of like, I guess, a female version of Batman. You know, in Batman, he also has a duality. You know, he has a double life.
Yep.
Well, in Girl with Gun, she has to come to terms with this double life. One as a superhero assassin helping the innocent, and the other as a regular normal girl.
Uh-huh. And with the with Girl with a Gun, what was it shot on, and how long does it run for, and I see on the website you've screened in a number of film festivals, and how's all that been progressing?
Well, we shot on the Panasonic DVX-100. We had three cameras,
yep.
Which was very necessary for, let's say, the fight sequence, you know, for continuity purposes, to shoot with more than one camera. In terms of the film festivals, we got into, the first one was the Park City Film Music Festival in January.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got into Comic-Con, which is probably our biggest one so far, and that's going to be on July 20th in San Diego, California. We are also in the FAIF Film Festival, and that's going to be shown in Los Angeles at the Man Chinese Theater. It's like a historic landmark.
Yep.
In Los Angeles, so we're showing there in October. The festival is October 5th through 13th, but the schedule won't be up until September. We're also in two festivals in Texas, one at the Wichita Falls Film Festival and the other at the IFFI NTX Film Festival, which is the Independent Film Festival of North Texas. The first one will be in July and the second one will be in October.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you're getting an opportunity to get the film out there. But in particular, what was it that drew you to, you know, the sort of martial arts action type of film, and also just making it a short film? Why did you do that?
Well, I mean, my favorite genres tend to be fantasy, action, sci-fi. I've always been fascinated by the Batman character, as I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. That's probably the main reason why I made Girl with Gun. When the writer, Emil Harris, he approached me with the idea of Girl with Gun, then I immediately took a liking to it because of that character, the superhero, female assassin. In terms of the action style sequence, you know, I'm very enamored with films like Kill Bill or the Matrix films, La Femme Nikita, those type of films. And I think that's what really drew me to that type of genre.
Mm-hmm. And with your filmmaking background, how long have you been trawling this industry, trying to crack it? And what sort of projects have you worked on in the past?
Well, I did go to USC, which is the University of Southern California, from 95 to 2000. One of my emphases was cinema. University of Southern California is known for the film program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess you could say technically since then. I mean, I've always loved film since I was a real little kid. But I got really serious, I think, in 2002 when I founded my production company, Russell Productions. And that's when I decided to make a film. It's called Her Night, and I made with Emil Harris, which was the writer of Girl with Gun. So we worked together and made that film, which was completed in November 2003. Since then, though, you know, I've done various projects, either producing or directing. You want me to name some?
Oh, yeah. No, this is an opportunity for you to tell us about what sort of work you've done and you know, and where we could find out about this work.
Oh, no problem. Well, Her Night is the first film that I attempted to do professionally. Again, was a DVX 100 camera. That was completed, as I said before, in 2003. I've also, in 2004, helped produce a zombie film called The Diary for a director, a friend of mine named David Covarrubias. And we're working together right now on another horror short called Perfect Red, which will be completed hopefully in a couple months. We just completed the score on that. I've also helped Emil Harris with his own directorial debut called Mavet. That's a super... No, I wouldn't say supernatural, but it's an homage to The Seventh Seal by Ingmar Bergman, mm-hmm. if you know what that is. It's about a chess game between two people. I don't want to give it away, but let's just say it's to the life or death. So, worked on that. Girl with Gun in 2005. I'm helping right now other fellow filmmakers named Alex DeLerma and David Kitchens with their films. One of them is Sellout, another is God's Little Monster, which I'm helping to market towards the film festivals right now. That's what I'm working on.
Yeah, and with your experience, has it always been with the DV, or have you shot on any other formats?
I would say DV.
Yep, and is that just because of financial reasons? And with Russ M, is that a sort of producing work, or how you're financing these productions?
Well, obviously it is more efficient to shoot digital versus film. You know, you get sync sounds, you could shoot, you know, 60 minutes on one tape versus 10 minutes on one reel. But I would say the real reason for shooting digital is because we do work with a lot of we tamper with the visuals for the visual effects. For instance, in Girl with Gun, when Ninja Girl climbs the wall, it is a process called wire removal, and it's easier to do with digital.
Yep.
Because it's, you know, you don't have to transfer like you do with film. You don't have to do a digital transfer. So it's cost effective. You know, with digital, it's going to be, that's your frame right there, you know? Whereas with film, when you transfer it, you know, it's sometimes, I don't know, I'm just, the digital and the film doesn't match, if you know what I mean. The visual effects, just putting it on there. I mean, like Spider-Man 2 or even, let's say, Star Wars Episode 4, when they tried to put it together, you know, like the Jabba the Hutt sequence.
Yep.
It just didn't match perfectly. With digital, though, it does match. And that's why I like to work with that medium. So when we do future projects, we want to work in higher-end digital, which is HD versus film.
And have you used HD yet on any of the current productions or?
Right now we're doing some tests with an HD camera that we got, and we want to employ that in our next project.
Okay. And does Russ M do anything else other than making films? Do they provide any corporate services or anything like that to filmmakers?
Yeah, we do also web design, targeting the film industry. So, you know, like film pages or production company websites, whatnot, you know. And I'm working with a team, and we're targeting a couple of, you know, film websites right now.
Yeah, great. And where do people find out more about, well, Russ M or Girl Without a Gun or anything else that you've mentioned on today's show?
Well, you can go to the official website at www.russem.com, which is the Rustin Productions website, or you can go to MySpace at www.myspace.com/GWG_girlwithgun.
Cool, wonderful. And look, I think everyone should check out the trailer for Girl Without a Gun, and because it's certainly a very slick production. But is there any plans where people can buy the film, or is there any plans to somehow get it out there? Because other than the film festival circuit, what are your plans with Girl with a Gun?
Well, right now is the film festival run. The reason we don't try to distribute right now is because of film festival rules and regulations. Once you broadcast it, you know, whether it be on the internet or on TV or whatnot, then you can't submit to film festivals.
Yep, yep. All right, well, people can check out your website and then in the near future see whether they can get it screened in their part of the world, or check out the trailer and keep an eye out for your work. It's certainly some promising stuff there, Russ, and thanks for taking the time to chat to us on Indie Film Nation.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Mike.
There you go, another happy MySpace filmmaker of the week, Russ Emmanuel, and with his fantastic short film, Girl with a Gun. And don't forget, starting next week, I forgot to mention at the top of the program, Melbourne Underground Film Festival kicks off on Thursday, the 6th of July, and I will be presenting a series of podcasts called muffcast.com, so drop into the site, and the feed hasn't been prepared yet, but once we get a couple of interviews done, we'll let you know where that is on next week's show. So definitely check out that if you're interested in speaking to or hearing from some of the Melbourne Underground Film Festival makers. And Lloyd Kaufman will be out for that, and hopefully I'll have another chat with him, as well as Chris Foligno from Gamers, as I mentioned at the start of the program, is having its world premiere. And check out the website for Indie Film Nation. com, the instant messages for all the AMI and iChat and Yahoo and MSN, it's Indie Film Nation. And email is mikesmith@indiefilmnation.com. Remember, if you want to leave us some voicemail, it's for the US, plus one, obviously, the US country code, 323-319-6477. If you're in Australia, it is as simple as dialing 03-9018-5466 to leave a comment about the show, or just letting us know about an event or a suggestion. And obviously, myspace.com/IndieFilmNation. Join up, my friends. Get involved. Leave a comment. Let me know what you think of the program. Hey, if you're in Podcast Alley, cast us a vote. If you've got iTunes fired up, put a review on the program. And look forward to all those kind comments and opinions out there that people have sent into the program. Would appreciate any sort of feedback. If you send us some feedback, we'll put you in the draw for that Frameforge package. Next week's program, we've got an interview with the screenwriter of Hard Candy, Brian Nelson, featured on the program, as well as some other fantastic interviews lined up with, Bruce Himmelblau has recorded an interview with the Midwest Film Festival head Mike McNamara, so we'll be featuring that on the program. And it's a pleasure to welcome him to the program, as I said at the in the In Focus segment. And if you too would like to become a Indie Film Nation correspondent, it might be just once a year. It might be, a couple times a year. If you'd like to be involved in this program, please feel free to contact me. I'm very much interested in spreading the indie film message from all parts of the globe. If you are somewhere interesting or there's something happening in your part of the world that you want to let us and everyone else know about, please drop us a line at indiefilmnation.com or my email, mikesmith@indiefilmnation.com. And now it's time to wrap the program up with a track from a long-time listener, Rob Benson, who is in a band called The Department of Energy, who have their album or EP available on iTunes right now. But this is one of his demo tracks called A Californian Stutter. You're going to like this one, and I love Rob's work and look forward to featuring more of his music on the program in the near future. Hey, and don't forget, if you're a Indie Film Nation listener and you also a musician or you're in a band, why don't you drop me a line and we too can play some of your music on the program. This program is a platform for everyone who's in the independent world to play their music, hear about their films, and I hope you enjoy Rob's track here. And that is all the time. Thank you. It's 1 year of podcasting here at Indie Film Nation. I hope you've enjoyed the journey as much as I have enjoyed presenting it to you. Catch you later and keep on filmmaking.
On the beach, the diplomat's son watches the Jamaican cricket player marry the Swedish girl who is a model for fashion magazines. Earlier when they'd spoken, he noticed her body was racked with exercise and her eyes were a shade above blue and breakless. She looked at him with disappointment as if there was something missing. No scars from sharks, no suggestion in his hands that he'd ever held a knife on purpose. He knows he's not dangerous in a way that could ever make anyone pull him forward and then tilt back over the spike of an unsettled life. But he also knows that he loves that girl from Hoxton so much he can't bear to touch her. As if there was something missing, no scars from sharks, no suggestion in his hands he'd ever held a knife on purpose. Oh, la di 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 stars.
Get this podcast and more great ones like it on the High Performance Podcast Delivery Network from Podshow and Limelight Networks.
I love it.